Hello again. You're listening to the News at One. The number of people with COVID-19 in hospital and intensive care here continues to come down. This lunchtime, there are 426 coronavirus patients receiving hospital treatment, with 102 in ICU. We're joined here in studio now by the HSE's Chief Clinical Officer, Dr. Colm Henry. Dr. Henry, you're very welcome to the programme and thanks for coming in to talk to us. We'll talk about the situation in our hospitals in just a moment, but first of all, the vaccination program. Obviously, a lot of focus on it this week. GPs saying that they're having problems, some of them, in getting the supplies that they thought were coming to them. Difficulties, I think, acknowledged in regard to that. And also, we know at this stage a shortfall on what had expected to be the number of doses administered this week. 100,000 was the target. It won't be that. How much short of that will it be now? Do we know at this stage?
Yes, Brian, a lot of questions there to start off with. So this is a vaccination program unprecedented in scale, complexity and rollout, and we've got, just to reflect on what's happened first, almost 500,000 vaccines given out at this stage, including coming to a close in long-term care. We're already beginning to see benefits there. We might touch on that later. And good evidence from other countries showing real evidence of improvement and protection. Also for healthcare workers, and again, we might talk about that. And now we see the rollout, as you point to, of the over 70s. And let's be clear about this. We know from the evidence here and abroad that the biggest risk for COVID-19 in terms of hospitalisation, illness and death is strongly linked to age. And that's why this cohort is so important. And by the end of this week, we'll have completed the vast majority of over 85 year olds, bar perhaps between 600 and 800 that we have to do next week with some practices who are unable to partner up with bigger practices. So yes, there were some issues this week, but in the great majority of those 1300 practices, we've managed to get that vaccine, as we committed to people wherever they were, to afford them the safety, and the evidence shows that that safety is going to, that protection is going to be considerable.
But the shortfall this week, how much short of that 100,000 target will you be?
Well, it looks certainly it's going to be down at 82,000 or thereabouts, one of the features of this programme is we're completely reliant on supplies. We are giving the vaccine out in any one week. We distribute out vaccines of the order of 99% of what we receive in that week. We have to keep some back for buffer stock and for second doses, but of the available stock, about 99% is distributed out that week.
But the difficulties in relation to the over 85s and the GPs aren't related to supply problems, are they?
Because no,
that's confined to AstraZeneca.
Clear issues this week, and I want to acknowledge for GPs, any who are listening out there, and for patients who are waiting on their vaccine, certainly shouldn't have happened, but a number of practices, the scheduled deliveries didn't arrive on the day, and there were other issues as well as what we call the consumables, the equipment they need for vaccination, shouldn't have happened. What I would say is, for the great majority, it did work out okay, but this particular vaccine that's going to the over 70s, a very fussy and precious vaccine in terms of its transport requirements, its reconstitution requirements, that it must be used 5 or 6 hours after it's reconstituted, and not like the flu vaccine, which comes in a pre-packed dose. It has to be drawn up, 5 or 6 doses given, and must be given within 5 or 6 hours.
What about next week? Again, the target had been 100,000. Will that be reached, or will there again, because of the problems you've been talking about, be a shortfall?
Well, there will be a shortfall because of the order of, we got fairly short notice from AstraZeneca of a shortfall of supplies of the order of 75,000 over a 2 week interval, but that will be made up, we're told, by the end of quarter one, which is the end of March. So we're hopeful we'll be able to catch up on any shortfall of distribution administration of vaccine by then. But looking at this coming week, 84,000, and again, finishing off, as I said, beginning to move into the 80 to 85 age group as we go down that right to till we capture everybody over 70, also really beginning to kick in on those second doses for long-term care. I mean, no, Brian, from the evidence now that there's considerable protection even after the first dose, but giving them the second doses, and also healthcare workers, getting those frontline healthcare workers done, and regardless of where they are.
And vaccination beginning next week and this group were identified to be moved up the priority list, as it were, those most at risk with underlying conditions, those most at risk from infection. Now, what will be happening next week in relation to that group?
Yes, if you recall in the original list from this early December by NIAC, they looked at people with chronic conditions between 16 and 64. And what's happened since then, there's been a growing realisation, certainly among those patients, the advocacy groups, and among the doctors who treat these patients, that there's particular elements of these different groups of chronic disease who have particular risks to COVID. And what NIAC have done in recognition of that kind of advocacy, and also in terms of recognising the evolving evidence and awareness internationally, is lift out those who are at very high risk and say, put them number four.
So how are they going to be identified and contacted?
It, again, is quite a tricky exercise for us. We don't have a national disease registry in this country, and the whole range of diseases covered: renal disease, cancer, immunosuppression, some disabilities, heart, lung disease. There's certain categories in each of those disease groups. So what we have to do is working initially through the hospital system is identifying as many of those patients as we can in each of those subgroups and then beginning to schedule them. So it is not an easy exercise. We've begun talking this morning. I was talking to clinical directors in hospitals throughout the country. It's a big ask of them to try and identify specific categories of cancer, renal patients, so that we begin to schedule them.
And when will those patients begin to be contacted? When will they hear from their hospital or whoever is their medical practitioner?
Well, to emphasise, we'll be working with primary care too, because many of these
GPs.
People live, with GPs too, but in the first instance, we're going to try and identify as many as we can in the hospital system and work with GPs. But we're beginning next week with some of these groups. We will contact them, and we'll be working throughout the month of March. Big number, upwards of 160,000 altogether. As I said, many different groups. This isn't a case of just corralling everybody into a mass vaccination centre. There are people with some fragile conditions there.
In making a start, how many of that 160 would you hope to get that first vaccination delivered to, administered next week?
We're aiming at 10,000 next week as part of that 84,000 I mentioned of this new category four. And as I said, at short notice, we're asking our hospital system to identify as many of these subgroups as possible so we can really get cracking the weeks after.
You mentioned emerging evidence of the impact of vaccination on the spread of the disease, on the control of the disease. What are we seeing both in terms of healthcare workers, who obviously are among those who are most exposed, but also those who are not healthcare workers who've begun to get the vaccination?
We're seeing different points in the story. So when you look to Israel and Scotland, we're seeing further down the story than where we are now. But even here, in Scotland, for example, we're seeing 4 weeks after the first dose of either Pfizer or the AstraZeneca dose, an 85% drop in hospitalisation for the Pfizer and for 95% for the AstraZeneca. These are results in excess of what the trial showed. In Israel, similarly, we're seeing decreased illness, and in England, in older people, decreased serious illness and hospitalizations. In this country, where we're seeing now the signalling pointing in the same direction, a huge drop in healthcare workers. From the week of January the 17th, we had 1,000 hospital workers sick per week, now 39 in the week ending last Sunday. That's a massive drop, and that can only be attributed to the impact of the vaccine, which of course was started in the hospital setting. Likewise, decrease in positive tests in residents and long-term care settings, and what we call healthcare acquired COVID. That's COVID that was acquired in a hospital setting. A big, big drop from 500 the week ending January the 17th to about 50 or so in the week ending last Sunday.
And as we also see those hospital numbers come down, both in general, people in general wards and in ICU, what's the impact of that in terms of relieving pressure on other hospital services? How much progress has been made towards resuming normal service to some extent?
Well, we learned through each surge. The first surge way back in March and April was a complete lockdown, and hospitals essentially became COVID services. We kept many services running this time: cancer clinics, diagnostics. We kept as much surgery going as we could. We also kept mental health services going in the community. We did learn a lot about how we could protect people more in the meantime, and as people who go to hospital know, they're unrecognisable from what they were like last March. So we made them safer, better places. The good news, though, is the falling community transmission and the vaccination are making healthcare facilities safer to come to now, and it does increase the number of options we have.
I mean, given the enormous impact that vaccination can make on the illness in the community, on the situation in our hospitals, on eventually presumably allowing us to begin to open up again as a society and an economy, should the government be looking everywhere it can, beyond existing arrangements, for additional supplies of vaccine?
Well, that's a matter for government. I would say, and I have to say, it is a policy matter. Clearly, we want to give out as much vaccine as we can to different groups. And a lot of the understandable frustration people have is, when is my turn? When am I going to get done? And we see those groups coming. People are worried, different professions, teachers, the Gardaí, and so on. We want to give it out as quickly as we can. But one of the things we have to do is look, where is the greatest impact? Where is the greatest risk? And where is the greatest benefit? And I just outlined to you and your listeners where real real impact we're seeing that justifies that prioritisation list, falling cases in nursing homes, falling cases in healthcare workers, and a reduced number of outbreaks in hospitals.
And just a final question in relation to carers, and we know there's been a lot of debate around where they come in the list of priorities, people who are looking after a family member or somebody else in their own home. They're not identified as a priority group, but that is something which the Immunisation Advisory Group says is under review. Is there a way even of providing vaccination to some of those, perhaps, for example, those who are looking after a young person who won't be vaccinated because the under-16s aren't receiving vaccine?
At this point in time, it is a difficult message I have to give. At this point in time, we want to get where there's maximum impact in terms of protecting the most vulnerable. And while I want to get the carers, we all want to get the carers and anybody else who feels exposed or worried this time, the prioritisation, difficult as it is for some people to accept, is proving its worth in terms of the real results we're seeing out here in terms of saving lives, preventing illness and preventing hospitalisation.
But particularly carers who are looking after a young person, do they have a particularly compelling case, would you accept?
There is a strong case there, and there are many other cases, and it's making such cases based on evidence that has led to a reprioritisation of the NIAC list, and as has been described by NIAC from the beginning, I'm not a member of NIAC, of course, but is that it is an agile list, and they'll look at the evidence that comes out and they'll respond to it, and that's exactly what they did with these people with chronic conditions.
Very good. Dr. Colm Henry, Chief Clinical Officer with the Health Service Executive, thank you for talking to us here on the programme.